T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Corner of Broadway and Battery. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
All right, welcome, welcome, welcome. It is really good to have you here. Thanks so much for stopping on by. We got a Warriors Wednesday for you, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay since the Deuce Deuce, and by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Ray Ratto in studio once again this afternoon on a What If Wednesday. We got a couple hypotheticals to toss around later in this hour. We got some matter-of-fact stuff coming out in the show today. Steve Kerr, live at 5:30 this afternoon. He's going to be joining us, and I really didn't expect to talk to Steve until Friday. I didn't think that they were going to have him hop on the show and do a little media hit with us until they played Game 3. So Steve Kerr joins us today at 5:30, and I'm really looking forward to that. We'll have a 5 before 5, Adam Kaplan at 4:30. He is going to be stopping on by right before we get NFL schedules released, which is a big deal today. And Ray, I know you're not a big fan of NFL schedule release day. I've got good news for you. Neither am I. I think it's a fool's errand to go through a schedule and try to assign wins and losses. But there are things that are important that you can start looking at with just the schedule release day. And I'm going to try to sell you on those things before we actually get the schedule at 5.
There's only one thing.
What do you like?
When we find out what the opening lines are for every game of the season. That's the best thing about it. All 256 regular season games. Wham, there they are. Start betting.
Good times. Futures, get them if you can. We're going to talk about the schedule. We're actually going to get it released at 5 o'clock. Steve Kerr comes on by, like we said, at 5:30 today. Cam Inman, he comes around at 6:15 this afternoon. At 6 o'clock, we're going to have a name game for you. So we got a fat show this afternoon. It is full.
Hey.
it wasn't you. It's the show. Believe me. Oh, by the way, for the name game today, we are going to be playing for the show. The baseball video game that's available on PlayStation. That's what's on the line today for the name game. There will be no clues this afternoon. So before we go further into what's going to happen when we get this schedule and what the Warriors are going to be looking at when they get down to Staples at Game 3. We got some interesting stuff from Kevin Durant to get to. Let me ask you point blank, did we overreact a little maybe to the sky is falling series that was down in San Diego, then in Los Angeles? Are the Giants a little bit better than we expected?
Their pitching's much better than we expected, but it's still 1/9 into the season. I mean, I think that's going to level off. The question is whether the hitting's going to get any better. I mean, it's just right now they're playing 444 baseball. I don't know of anybody who thought that they wouldn't win 4 out of 10 games. That still doesn't figure out 70 wins.
I
think they might be. I think their pitching's better than we thought it should be. But I think in terms of a record, it's probably about where they'll end up.
I don't understand, if you're a Giant fan, how you would feel about the report, if it were real, that they're better than we thought they were, because that to me looks like opportunity lost. And I'm not saying that Bryce Harper would have been the end-all, be-all to fix the offensive woes of the Giants. But really, if you look at their pitching, I mean, they're a hitter or two away from winning a few more games here, and it's a shame that they've gotten off to such a decent pitching start with almost, no offense to back it up. I mean, Kevin Pillar was basically a Punch Judy hitter indoors at Sky Dome. He comes to the San Francisco Giants, and he's the captain of the team. Like, he is more important to the Giants than Buster Posey is. He's more important than Brandon Belt is. He's more important than Brandon Crawford is. And he just got here. I don't know if that's an indictment on those individuals, the Giants' development, how they continue to keep their players on the right track, but everyone is seemingly getting old at the same time, or they're too young because they're from the Giants system and not good enough yet. Kevin Pillar, who is officially not good enough for the Toronto Blue Jays, is the best thing that has ever happened to the San Francisco Giants in this baseball season.
That might be overreacting a bit, too.
Well, until they get a lot of value back for like a Bumgarner trade or something like that. Kevin Pillar, now, if it ended today, he is the team MVP.
Okay, but the season probably has just like another 89% to go.
Right, but he joined them, 10% into it already? Like he just got here. He's got four
home runs.
I'm not
trying to dog Kevin Pillar. All I'm saying is it's way too early to make any assumption about any player. And I'm not picking out another player and say he will have a dramatically better year than Kevin Pillar. Kevin Pillar might be a guy they move at the end of July.
Of course.
So, you know, I think for Giants fans, be happy with your pitching, you know, grumble some more about your hitting, and accept the fact that this is the start of a long rebuild, and there are going to be more bad days than good ones. Just buy a beer and suck it up.
They've won 4 out of 5. The San Francisco Giants got 3 home runs in Washington yesterday. Longoria, Duggar, and Belt all went deep. The pitching right now, only Derek Holland has an ERA over 4 among their pitching staff. Or is that just the starters, Albie? Is that everybody? That's everyone. All right. Collectively, the staff has got a 2.77, second in the National League, third in all of baseball. The Giants bullpen, officially a weapon with a 1.94 ERA, number 1 in baseball. Again, nothing robs a fan of enthusiasm faster than the phrase,
"Schmarrn shampoo shies."
But here we are. I mean, if the Giants had just done anything to make this offense a little bit better, they could have been a team that could have honestly sold its fan base and itself on the idea that they could seriously have flirted with that second National League wild card position. And
that's nuts.
It is nuts, but there isn't a lot of good baseball happening.
No, there isn't, but there's a point at which you just go, there's not a lot of good baseball happening. And, it's fine to have all the hope you want, but the truth is, that's not how this is going to work. They're not going to be good. You just sort of have to hope you can cling to some things that will make you hopeful for 2021. I mean, it's difficult to tell fans, if you wait 3 years, this has a chance to be good, because that's taking hope and strangling it. I get that. But it's the only realistic way to look at this. It's, this team needs to be regenerated. And it's not going to be regenerated immediately. And it's probably the regeneration may not even be completed, until the middle of next year. It's just, that's the deal.
I'll tell you what killed the 2019 Giants. When they couldn't get anything done in 2017 with the Florida Marlins. I mean, sure, you didn't get Stanton, but you didn't get Yelich. You didn't walk away with one of those two guys. I mean, that offseason is probably haunting this regular season as much as anything.
But they didn't have anything to offer.
No, they didn't. But, the Marlins agreed to the Stanton trade. The Marlins agreed to it. They said it. And then Stanton was like, no, I'm not interested in the Giants.
Okay,
not going.
But that was a component of the trade, that Stanton had to sign off on it too. And it gets back to what we've been talking about with the ballpark, which is, he didn't want to play here. He didn't want to play where it's cold. He didn't want to play anywhere but either L.A. or New York. And he was going to be incredibly expensive, and he didn't want to give 13% of that to the state.
We'll talk about if moving in the fences might actually help. I know that was a topic that the Giants actually put on the table for the first time in the existence of that conversation. I know fans have been talking about it for years, but the Giants actually put it on the table. The Sharks basically fell off the table last night. We're going to talk a little bit about their demise in the playoffs, what it's meant for the franchise, and here we go again. Another eye-rolling first round for Sharks fans to sit through. It was embarrassing last night. 5-0 shutout.
Done scoring.
His presence was not enough to get you over the hump. Speaking of over the hump, Robert Kraft's video might be released soon.
We'll talk about that later. Come on, Ray. You were impressed by that.
No. We'll get into that later. But I'm not going to view the video.
Well, no.
If that helps.
No one wants to see that.
No, but it's the idea that a rich guy can't bend an entire state's constitution to get his own way that appeals to me.
I do like that. We've got Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people. A couple of athletes appeared on that. We're going to get to that today. How are the Warriors going to get past Patrick Beverley? Again, we'll be asking Steve Kerr about that at 5:30 this afternoon, and we're really looking forward to talking to you. We're looking forward to a few NFL schedules. We get them all live at 5, 8 p.m. East Coast, 5 o'clock our time. Why do NFL schedules matter? There are three reasons, and we're going to give them to you next here on 95.7 The Game after we say hello to Elena. Hello, Elena.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So everyone's trying to be the first to the table with the, oh, I know who's playing who when. We do have the NFL schedule being released at 5 o'clock our time this afternoon. We just got a little birdie tweet someone here or tell someone that the Browns could be coming to town to play the 49ers this year. Could be happening in week 5. We will see. We won't have to guess about what might be the schedule because we're going to actually have it in less than 2 hours from now. Why does the schedule release matter at all? Well, it's a chance to do a studio show and sell a little advertising for the networks that cover these things, obviously. The NFL schedule wasn't something that you needed months in advance when I was a kid. Apparently these days we do. We need it now. Ray, I know that you hate the concept of the NFL schedule being a holiday or a big deal. And I get it. I know where you're coming from. It's a whole bunch of...
It's a commercial. Well, it's a gigantic commercial that fuels the NFL network, which basically is just the propaganda arm of the NFL. And, you know, I mean, there is one reason to have it, and I'll get to that in a minute. But
there are three.
I will judge.
I'll give you a couple more.
First.
I know you will. I want you to. That's the thing. I think you're going to agree that these things do matter. You don't like dealing in hypotheticals. I've learned that about you. And the hypothetical win-loss show that everyone wants to do, and I'm sure we'll sort of do just a little bit at 5 o'clock. I mean, how can you not start saying, oh, that looks like a win to me. That looks like a loss to me. That's just the nature of a sports fan to do that, especially a football fan. But
or really anybody who's lonely a lot.
Sure. But there are so many moving pieces. Like, yeah, that game at Green Bay looks like something until Aaron Rodgers broke his clavicle and wasn't playing that day, and it got a lot easier. So, you know, there's no reason to put a lot of stock into projections of what the game will look like because you have no idea what the team's even going to look like, including your own because you haven't had a draft yet. So it is a little nuts the amount of study people want to make out of this. I have three reasons to actually care about the NFL schedule release. Ray, you said you have one. What is your one?
Oh, it's also the day that Vegas releases the betting lines for every one of the 256 games.
Right. You love that.
Well, no, it's the only reason to know what the schedule is.
It's not. There are three other reasons. You got to trust me on this one.
No, you're going to have to say them, and then I will judge each on their own merits.
Okay. Number one. And this matters in the Bay Area because you will agree with me that the Bay Area is indeed on the West Coast. So you want to know how many times you're going to the East Coast, how many 10 a.m. kickoffs on your body clock you're going to have, and where those locations are going to be. Going to Miami is a little bit bigger of a deal than going to Carolina for some people because, oh, it's the South Beach nightlife. So where will your East Coast games be dotted? And how early in the day will they be for West Coast teams? That's something to consider. Would you agree?
But that can be done just by releasing the schedule without a show. All you have to do is put the names on a piece of paper, and you can do all that.
I'm not trying to sell you on the show, Ray. I'm trying to sell you on the content.
Well, at
of
some
the
point, at some point, they have to put the schedule out because otherwise, nobody knows when they're playing. You'll have a lot of forfeits, and that's probably bad for the league.
It's bad.
So if you want to set the bar there, I accept that. The show is what I object to.
These are three things that fans can learn and start thinking about as they consider the upcoming season. I think counting East Coast morning 10 a.m. kickoff start times is an important thing for a West Coast team to do. That's my first reason why looking at the schedules coming out today might matter a little bit. Number two, Ray, I think you'll even agree with me.
I
think you're going to agree with me. This is my premise that you will agree that it's easier to beat an inferior quarterback than it is a superior quarterback, correct?
More or less.
Right.
It depends on whether you're trying to win or trying to tank.
There you go. Well, I'm glad you agreed with me on some level there, because how many great quarterbacks are you playing? Now, you can't guarantee the great quarterback will be there, but you can assume they might be. The amount of great quarterbacks that you're facing in any season is going to deeply affect your win-loss total at the end of the season. So I think that is an important thing to glean. Is this a legitimate Pro Bowl caliber quarterback that we're facing in this game? How many weeks in a row do you have to prepare for the DEFCON 1 of quarterbacking? How many weeks in a row do you get off on not having to worry about that matchup so much? So I think you can glean that from the schedule released today. And finally, who's coaching against you? Who's the coach? I mean, I think coaching matchups matter, and it certainly matters if you believe that you have the superior coach. I mean, looking at, hey, this looks like a game where Kyle Shanahan will have the coaching advantage just by showing up on the sideline, you're going to be counting that. If you believe in John Gruden, if you think that John Gruden is a coaching advantage over a vast majority of other working coaches, you're going to want to see that schedule and what the matchups will be. Coaching matchups matter, and you at least get to see that. What quarterbacks you can expect to play, and how many times you got to go to the East Coast. Those are the three big reasons why 5 o'clock matters just a little bit today.
The only reason why knowing the schedule is important is because it tells you in order what the games are.
Right, which matter.
But that's it. That's the extent of it.
These other things matter.
No, but those other things only matter in terms of that. That's the reveal today, that you know the order in which the games are played. You can extrapolate from that anything you want. If you're an enormous football fan, you can extrapolate 80 things from it. But in terms of what the NFL is doing today, they're just telling you in what order these games are being played. Most people want to know, well, what are the three games on Thanksgiving? Well, you'll find out in November. What do you care? I mean, it's not going to change your viewing habits. The only people in America who absolutely need to know what the 49ers schedule and the Raiders schedule is are clergymen in the Bay Area, so they can figure out when their churches are going to be half full, not full at all, or maybe just a smattering of people.
We're filling up churches here in the Bay Area?
Well, probably not, but I'm just saying that's one of the few businesses that frankly rely on what the NFL schedule is going to tell you. Because if the Raiders are playing at 10 o'clock, places of worship where there are a predominant number of Raider fans, that's going to be a lean week at the collection plate.
Probably.
That matters. But the rest of it is, that's all stuff you could find out under any circumstances. All you really need to know is what the order is, and then you can play with it all you want.
I'll tell you
I'm just not interested.
When the Raiders do move to Las Vegas, their schedule release is going to mean more next year, because that is going to be the ultimate dude bro escapism. We're going to root for our team.
That's
Las
true.
Vegas, that is going to be very interesting.
It'll matter to Southwest Airlines, because that's how, I mean, people are not driving down to Vegas. They're going to fly.
By the way, the 49ers, I guess we have this leaked, will be playing three games in primetime, including one against the Browns. Matt Maiocco is reporting that. So what do you know? Our Browns little birdie wasn't wrong about that. Okay. All right. Well, there's a sexy game, right? Sort of? Kind of? I guess that's going to be pretty much up to this guy.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
By the way, much more coming up on the NFL, what we know, what we might glean from it. Adam Kaplan at 4:30 today. And once we actually get the schedules at 5 o'clock, we'll talk more in depth about the 49ers' upcoming season with Cam Inman at 6:15. We got a 5 before 5 today. We got Steve Kerr joining us at 5:30 today. And today, Kevin Durant was talking at practice, and was really going in depth about the matchup and how he played in game two and what he was trying to accomplish in game two and the frustrations that he was getting from Patrick Beverley in game two. And he said something that, you know, I don't want to argue, but he just completely contradicted his own head coach. Asked about how he would like to see Kevin Durant come out in game three, Steve Kerr said,
"He can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
I want to see him get 20 shots, 30. Now, obviously, Steve is not putting that out there as if it's mandate and it must be 20 or 30 shots or he's going to be angry with the player. But he obviously wants Kevin more involved. I mean, that's what this is.
He can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
Here's what Kevin Durant said.
I'm not going to go out there and just go shoot 20 or 30 shots. You know, I don't play like that. So, I mean, we were up 30 points. So I had five shots. Everybody's shots were kind of evenly distributed around that time. We were up 30. So me taking two more shots after that wasn't the reason why we lost.
It wasn't the reason why you lost. I'll agree with you there. But it's a huge reason why you weren't able to hold off the Avalanche. You know, for him to be so passive as a 31-point lead evaporates, well, there's a time for you to start exercising the more shot theory. It really is. And Kevin Durant can talk about his efficiency and the way he wants to go out there and do this, but it almost looks, and I really hope there's no subversive trying to, you know, like, oh, if you really think this is Curry's team, let him go win you playoff games going on here. Like, that we're way too deep into what matters for that stuff to be popping up, I would certainly be hoping. But there's a little contradiction going on right there.
There's not, because Kerr is doing one thing. He's basically saying, I like when Kevin shoots. I'm comfortable with that. But it's not that big. He's throwing the question away. I mean, that's the hidden message here. It's just, I like when he's playing well. Well, who doesn't? And Durant is basically saying, well, I don't have to take 20 or 30 shots. And I think they're both in agreement on that. I think we take what these guys say in these sort of gang interviews as opportunities for them to bare their souls. No, they're not. It's opportunities for them to say what they think, you know, will cause the least amount of grief. They don't really have any value at all. And they're all designed basically to say to the microphones and the notepads in front of them, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. If there was an issue, you wouldn't find out about it in one of those. These are nonsense, basically. They're sound bites that have no calories to them. It's Kerr basically saying, there's no issue with Kevin Durant. And there's Durant saying, I'm not the reason we lost. And both of those things are true until the end of the playoffs. At that point, you might hear, you know, one thing or another or 12 things. But for now, they're fulfilling an obligation as painlessly as possible.
And I'll say this in Kevin Durant's defense too, and it does, I guess, add on to what you're saying, that there's no real contradiction going on here, is I very much doubt Kevin Durant heard Steve Kerr say that and try to directly refute what Steve Kerr was saying. He wasn't listening to the
question,
Kerr interview.
And the question might have been directed to him based on Kerr's answer, or the other way around, because I don't know in what order they spoke. I just don't think it has any value, because I know why those answers come out. They're designed to be as harmless and as vapid as possible, and I think they both succeeded.
When asked about his offensive game in Game 2, he was going back and forth with Mark Medina, and here is that little Q&A.
Tell me how you want me to play.
Oh, basically, you know, Kevin was saying, well, how would you like me to go out there and play, after Medina's question was basically, how do you need to go out and play to win Game 3?
Tell me how you want me to play.
Well, I'm just asking you how you feel.
I just want to have a conversation on how you feel I should play.
I'm asking you the question.
You just don't know?
It's not me to decide, but I'm just asking your perspective.
See, like, to me, like, Mark Medina blew it there a little bit. Kevin Durant wants a conversation in that moment. Give him one. Just be like, well, you know, what do you want? You know, if Kevin Durant came to me and I was in that scrum and he was like, well, what do you want me to do? I'd be like, I want you to run over Patrick Beverley. I want you to shoot over a guy that you can get your shot off on every single time you post him up. That's what I want you to do. I want you to destroy Patrick Beverley. Why? Because you're Kevin Durant, and that's the way the NBA universe is supposed to work. Now, Medina didn't say that, obviously. He's not, you know, he's there to ask questions, not get into debates with players. But it was not a frosty moment. Like, I actually thought Durant was trying to engage him. I thought there was an honest attempt at a, okay, well, what do you want? Now, maybe he was going to say, well, you don't know anything, or I don't know.
But, oh, no, no, that's implied in every answer.
Of course it is. So I would let him know a little bit. You know, that's why I would have been very honest about what I wanted to see. I want to see you take Patrick Beverley's soul in game three. That's what I would like to see. I want you to make him and his entire family regret ever picking up a basketball. That's what I want from you in game three. Durant actually answered the question by saying, well, you know, I'm either going to shoot or pass. It's kind of what basketball players do.
Well, when I get the ball and in my position to score, I will look to score. If I don't have an option to score, I will look to pass. So we run a lot of plays here. We move the ball every time down court. So every time I touch it, I'm not just going to break the play just to be aggressive just because I need to get up 30 shots because it looked like something wrong with me. No, I'm going to play I'm going to play basketball. We won game one that way. We were up 30 game two. I think we just need to stick with the game plan we had the first 3.5 quarters and do that for 48 minutes.
I'll agree with half of that. I certainly agree with half of that. You do what you did in the first 2.5 quarters, and everything's going to be hunky-dory in game three. I think we're both in agreement that a can of whoop-ass is probably getting opened in game three. I'd be a little disappointed if it weren't. I mean, that's what we want from this team. It is the level of expectation they told us to have of them. And I don't think adding Bogut over DeMarcus Cousins changes things dramatically at all. It's just a luxury that you're able to go back to somebody who knows what they're doing. By the way, today's the 1 month anniversary of Andrew Bogut rejoining the Golden State Warriors. His responsibilities went up considerably in the month that he has been with the team, don't you think? So when the conversation with Durant turned to Patrick Beverley, that's where things I thought got pretty interesting, too. Here's what KD had to say about the way that he was being officiated in that moment and the way that Beverly's allowed to be really aggressive with him.
When he run up on me like a pit bull, grab me, hold me, I don't mind it. That's how he make his money. That's how he feed his family. But if I throw something back, then let us play. You get what I'm saying? So I got 4 or 5 offensive fouls like that. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, each possession, how I could be more effective without getting offensive fouls.
Yeah, and it's what Caron Butler said Kevin Durant would do when Caron Butler joined us yesterday. He said he was going to go watch the film, take this whole thing to the lab.
What he's going to do is he's going to watch the film. He's going to watch where his hand's at. He's going to watch his positioning. And most importantly, he's going to watch the layers in the second line of defense and understand where the help is coming from. So when he evaluates that situation, he's going to know how to 1-1,000 catch. And when that their help rotation come, he's going to dig into the seams, find his real estate, and Patrick Beverley can't get to his shot. And I don't know too many people that can.
No, not a lot of people can get to Kevin Durant's shot.
Yeah, because it's not just Patrick Beverley doing this. It's what you notice, but it's the help. The Clippers defensively have decided there are guys on this team we really need to work very hard to guard. Curry, they're guarding as soon as he crosses the half-court line. Thompson, they have not let have a lot of freedom either. And Durant is just, they're helping on Durant. They're basically saying, if you can beat us with Draymond Green, great. If you can beat us with whoever your center is, knock yourselves out. We don't think you can do it. We're guarding 3 guys with 5. Have a good night.
Yeah.
And again,
it's working to an
extent. Well, it's really not. I mean, if you want to get down to it, the Warriors have scored 252 points in 2 games. What happened the other night was simply they stopped playing defense, period, because they thought the game was in the bag. Defense is hard to do because it's effort all the time. You can't take defensive possessions off. And they thought their bench, when it came on, would at least be able to hold serve. None of those things happened, and that's why Kerr said after the game, we stopped playing.
Well, we stopped playing. We kind of disconnected, kind of mid third quarter, and lost our defensive edge. I mean, they scored 85 points in the second half. You know, we had really done a good job defensively in the first half. So we didn't, you know, we kind of messed with the game a little bit. And when you do that, you're in some trouble, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, they let their guard down. Keep your guard up at all times. Right. Protect yourself at all times.
Because ultimately, that's what happened. They'd stopped because they thought they had it. They thought they had it nailed down. And in every other instance like that in the history of the NBA playoffs, the team that was up 31 held the lead. This happened the one time because they ran into one team that simply said, well, we're going to play for all 48. We're not accepting our fate. And that's pretty rare when you're down 31 in the second half. Most teams start thinking, well, maybe time to rest our guys. Doc Rivers said, we're going all out the whole time because we have nothing on the line.
Well, what
and,
I really
and
hope.
For the one time out of however many games it's been, it worked.
What I really hope is the Warriors get back to that concept of team ball for 48 minutes. It's not about any one individual matchup. I heard as I was leaving Oracle a little early because I thought up 31, yeah, we're good here tonight. So I'm getting in the car, I'm driving home, and Tim Roy is saying, you know, a lot of balance out there tonight. Not a single Warrior is taking more than 10 shots. And they were destroying the Clippers at that time.
Which is why the insistence on how many shots Durant gets is just hilarious to me. I mean, because that game should never have come down to, all right, Kevin Durant, you have to save us. Okay, because that's not how this team is ultimately. But it didn't. It came down to they stopped playing and they couldn't figure out how to start again. And even if Durant makes a shot, they still lose by two. Or maybe if somebody else makes a shot, maybe the bleeding stops. It's the idea that somehow Durant was the guy who had to step up. Curry steps up. He could have done it. Thompson steps up.
Well, Curry had the bad quarter. Curry was at least taking the shots to try to do something to get the Warriors back.
But he was also
the
throwing the ball all over the court.
Yes, was Kevin who led the team in turnovers.
There were a lot of things that could have stopped this. None of them did. And Durant is not the sole reason why this was genuinely, top to bottom, a team conspiracy to lose a game that it was impossible to lose.
I know it's not just on Kevin Durant, but I really feel that part of the reason the Clippers believed in the comeback was because of the matchup that Patrick Beverley was putting on Kevin Durant. It was an inspirational performance that the entire team fed off of. And Durant says that when they get back on the court in Game 3, he cannot get back into that one-on-one matchup.
When I get the ball in my spots, you know, I got to pest Patrick Beverley, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation. But we got a guy that's dropping and helping, and then we got another guy that's just sitting on me waiting for me to dribble the basketball. If I put the basketball on the floor, you know, I could probably make 43% of my shots if I shoot them like that. But that's not really going to do nothing for us with the outcome of the game, you know, because we got a nice flow. Everybody touching the rock. Everybody shooting and scoring. So I'm not going to get in the way of the game because, you know, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverley. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am.
Oh, by the way, I'm calling for the 40 piece tomorrow night. If that's how Kevin really does it, you all know who I am, show it to us again.
I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am.
I mean, yeah, I do. That's why I expect more of you. That's why I expect when anything goes wrong, you're the answer. You're always the answer to the question, what do you need more of? You at all
why,
times
why,
need more
why is
Kevin
Curry
Durant.
Not the answer? Why is Thompson not the answer? Why is Green not the answer?
Well, Green is not the offensive answer, and that's clear.
No, but he can make a play that stops a run. He's done it before. I mean,
sure.
It's the idea that, no, the Warriors are actually individual components. That is the maddening part of this because they don't function.
But that is how Kevin presents himself.
No, it's how the question presents itself. All right? The question is presented, how do you feel about your game? And if your doesn't mean your team's game, that question is designed to isolate him. Say, explain what you did. And that's not what the Warriors are. That's not how this thing happened. It happened as an ensemble. And it's still an ensemble when it works right. And it worked exactly like that for the first 2.5 quarters in Game 2. It's the idea that somehow something went wrong, you are responsible, that just breaks down for me.
What are you expecting in Game 3? 888-957-9570. Your call's certainly welcome as we come on up, as we get closer and closer and closer. Warrior playoff coverage on 95.7 The Game, presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors, and we're looking forward to Game 3 tomorrow night. That is for sure. We have a couple scenarios to go over. Some what-ifs, if you will. A little what-if Wednesday's around the corner, and we're about an hour, less than an hour away from saying hello to Adam Kaplan as we start talking a little NFL with him at 4:30 this afternoon, courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Damon Blue Show on 95.7 The Game.
Good to be with you this Wednesday. It is actually beautiful outside, and it feels like it's the first time in a long time that's actually happened. So that's got us in a good mood. Unfortunately, Golden State Warriors don't have anyone in a good mood right now. Hopefully the mood gets better with a Game 3 win tomorrow. We've got Steve Kerr live at 5:30 coming up here on 95.7 The Game, and we're looking forward to that conversation. We've got some What If Wednesday about to pop off, but we got some calls coming in, so let's take those before we do it. Ray Ratto sitting shotgun this afternoon, and this is Zach in Hayward. Zach, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, guys. One thing that I don't know if you guys have addressed, but it doesn't seem like a lot of people are talking about it, was how early Kerr took Curry out of the game in the third quarter. And it's just something I really noticed. And I think that Kerr was trying to get guys some rest with the big lead. And he threw the rotation out of whack. And I think it kind of threw the team out of whack. So I just wanted to say Kerr definitely has some blame for that loss as well. Thank you.
Well, coming up at 5:30, we'll ask him about it. And if he won't extend more time to, you know, Curry playing with that fourth foul or get him back in the game a little bit earlier. It's not like you foul out with five. It takes six in the NBA. The rotations, yeah, Steve Kerr did say they were a little gobbledygook there for a minute, and it was because of foul trouble.
We got a little messed up rotation-wise with the foul trouble, but that's not the excuse because you should still be able to execute. But we, you know, once you lose momentum in a game against a really good team. It's hard to get it back, and so we really lost this game mid third quarter when we stopped playing.
Richard San Bruno, what do you got, Richard?
Not too much, Damon. I want to make observation about the series. Now, the third game, the Warriors will win decisively, but I think the fourth game, the Clippers will win, and then the fifth game is the trap game. Because if the Warriors go in thinking they're going to win because they're the Warriors or Scott's get to heaven, the Clippers will beat them. And then in game six, the Clippers will run at them like a tank. And it will be an all-out war. And I think the Clippers can win in six. If they don't do that, the Warriors will lose in seven, will win in seven. But I think the fourth game and the fifth game, and I think the fourth game is going to be the trap game. And the Clippers are going to win that one. And then the fifth game, Oakland's going to get too confident, too arrogant. They very well could lose it. And I think the Warriors should look at their own history. The We Believe team, when they beat the Mavericks, they were an eighth seed. So it can happen. Also, I watched Jordan play in person. I'm from Chicago. His team would have never, that would have never happened on the Michael Jordan Bulls team.
Well, look, I'm not going to argue with you there, but the whole trying to map out how this is going to flow, I don't know if that's if it's something we can really sit around and do. I still like the Warriors to end this in five. I'll be surprised if they don't. But in order to do that, they need to go now pick up two wins down in L.A. I think we're all on the same page here for game three. But, Ray, you yesterday were saying game four, you got that circled as the lookout game too.
Oh, it is now. I mean, look, if the Warriors lose game three after what happened in game two, shame on them. I mean, they're blatantly better talent-wise than the Clippers are, and they now know that the Clippers don't stop playing. So they're either going to do what Oklahoma City's done the last two games and shoot 12% from the three-point line, or they're going to handle their business, which means that yeah, game four is the pivotal one, and if they win that one, then we killed a couple of days of radio. But other than that, this is not a particular milestone in Warrior history. I mean, it's something you could talk about at a tavern, but that's about it. But if they lose game three, now everything about this changes. I don't think it changes in the Clippers' favor. I mean, they'll be up 2-1, but they still won't have the better team. But I think the Warriors, after embarrassing defeats, usually come out with a little bit of red ass. And not that red ass helps you much, but I think they'll be less inclined to declare the game over. I don't know if it does or not, but they'll be less inclined to declare the game over after 28 minutes.
I would certainly hope so. Ricardo Sonoma, what do you got, Ricardo?
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. How are you guys?
Doing well. Thank you.
Well, like I said earlier, don't take the bait too hard. That's the reason why we kind of lost game two. We slacked off, and like what Steve Kerr said, we stopped playing. And what they need to do, obviously readjust on the defensive end. Points off turnovers is key also for the Warriors. And, you know, about Kevin Durant, I love how unselfish he is, but there are times where I feel like he's a little too unselfish.
Right, you know, like it's time for him to be more assertive when the more assertive buzzer is officially going off in the entire arena. I mean, say what you want about, you know, what about Steph Curry? Why isn't it on him? Well, Steph is out there at least taking shots. Like, he's trying to create. He might not be hitting shots, but he's taking shots. Durant didn't take a shot in that fourth quarter until he had that huge Mama Chewbacca dunk for an and one. And, you know, the comeback was full underway before he started shooting more. So I do think that he's a guy who needs to say, you know, look, they gave me the NBA Finals, Steph Curry. I don't think do you remember a game-winning shot Steph Curry's hit in the postseason? I mean, I've seen him
typically they haven't had to,
right?
Yeah, I mean,
not a lot of opportunity.
Well, the shot in New Orleans was significantly, but you don't. I mean, again, well, I mean, I kind of said what I was going to say about it. This is not a thing where you have to be the assertive guy at the end. They don't do well when one guy asserts himself. Everybody was screaming early in the year, Kevin Durant's got the ball too much, and he's, you know, it's too much isolation ball. Then fine, run your offense the way it's designed. You should be fine. All you have to do is not stop playing. I mean, I don't think this is broken. I think what this was it was a demonstration of sloth, and it was a demonstration of arrogance. But it's not fatal because it doesn't speak to some sort of competitive imbalance that they suddenly suffered. They just stopped playing because they thought they'd done the job already, and they were wrong.
Thought the horse was in the barn. It was not. This is Brandon, San Rafael.
Yeah, I completely disagree with you there. I think that the Warriors are fine. Kevin Durant's playing fine. I don't think we let our foot off the gas. I think what we just saw was Lou Williams playing some of the best basketball that he looked like he was Steph Curry. I mean, every decision he made was right. They scored 85 points in the second half. It looked like sort of a historic playoff second half. I think we just ran into one of those, and it's fine. It's a one-off.
So anomaly. You're calling full-fledged anomaly. Don't worry about it. Over in five.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brandon, thank you very much for the call and for listening. Appreciate you out there. So we promised you a little What If Wednesday, and you know what? I do want to get into that right here and now. One more, Rich in Fremont, and then we're in What If Wednesday. What do you got, Rich?
I think one of the things, hey, first of all, thanks for having me on, Damon. I really love your show. And Ray Ratto, I know you don't know what's on everything, but I still love your take, man. I think that really when it comes down to it is that one of the reasons why the Warriors lost that game is because of the fact that even though everybody talks about how much talent they have, at the end of the day, good teams can beat you even if you're talented. And the way they do that is, one, they get into your head, or two, they cause you to redirect, you know, your game plan trajectory. And I think in this game, that's kind of what happened. You know, you combine those two things, you know, with good coaching of Doc Rivers, and, you know, her not being more alert to what's going on in front of them, then this is what happens. This is the end result. And so I think what they need to do is they need to just buckle down, go in there, play. play their game. Stop thinking about what everybody else thinks about Patrick Beverly and the media and all this other stuff. And just go out there and play Warriors basketball.
Thank you very much. Well said. Well done. 888-957-9570. We're about to hit our 4 o'clock hour, and we're going to do it What If Wednesday style. I like that an awful lot.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.